Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the ReNew Third Quarter Fiscal Year 2024 Earnings Report. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Nathan Judge, Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Betsy, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This morning, the company issued a press release announcing results for its fiscal 2024 third quarter, ended December 31st, 2023. A copy of the press release and the presentation are available on the Investor Relations section on ReNew's website at www.renew.com. With me this morning are Sumant Sinha, Founder, Chairman, and CEO, Kailash Vaswani, our CFO, and Vaishali Nigam Sinha, Co-founder and Chairperson, Sustainability. Prepared remarks, we will open the call for questions. Please note, our safe harbor statements are contained within our press release, presentation materials, and materials available on our website. These statements are important and integral to all our remarks. There are risks and uncertainties that could cause our results to differ materially from those expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. So we encourage you to review the press release we furnished in our Form 6-K and the presentation on our website for a more complete description. Also contained in our presentation materials and annual report are certain non-IFRS measures that we reconciled to the most comparable IFRS measure, and these reconciliations are also available on our website in the press release, presentation materials, and our annual report. It is now my pleasure to hand it over to Sumant.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Nathan. Good morning and good evening to everybody on this call. I'm glad to have you on our third quarter fiscal year ended 2024 earnings call. The calendar year 2023 marked a significant milestone for the Indian renewable energy sector, as well as for us. India, now the world's most populous nation, has experienced a surge in power demand, necessitating the need for more power. In April of 2023, the Ministry of New and Renewable Energy ramped up the auction calendar significantly in a bid to achieve the country's 500 GW target for renewable energy installations. The government's commitment has now transpired into action, and a record number of auctions have been conducted so far during the year. So far in fiscal 2024, we have seen more than 40 GW of auctions being conducted, which is a significant increase over last year, when about 12 GW of capacity was auctioned. Not only this, we are also tracking another 70 GW of central and state tenders expected to be auctioned over the next few months. As India intensifies its Made in India initiative to become a global manufacturing hub more broadly, the imperative for securing reliable power becomes even more pronounced. This expansion of the addressable renewable energy market has provided developers, such as us, the most favorable environment in the renewable energy sector that we have seen yet. As the number of auctions has increased significantly, competition has tailed off a little bit, leading to the discovery of higher tariffs. The subscription rate for new auctions has declined significantly this fiscal year and were the lowest on record this past quarter, often less than 100% of the capacity being auctioned for complex projects, resulting in auctions clearing pretty much at the initial bid offer. Year to date, we have seen an increase in tariffs and in particular in wind auctions, which increased 14% year-on-year. Our differentiated ability to do wind makes us stand out in a market where there are far fewer developers with this ability. We note that even with the increase in tariffs, renewable energy continues to be the lowest cost source for new electricity supply in the country, considerably cheaper than the primary competitive alternate, which is coal power. Beyond the rise in tariffs, we saw several other factors that are supporting better returns, such as a record fall in the cost of solar modules, stable FX, adequate domestic debt financing, and a significant reduction in receivable days. The year which started with a litany of challenges has become one of the most favorable markets for Renew in our history. As we approach the onset of fiscal year 2025, we eagerly anticipate leveraging the new opportunities that have arisen during the year, especially in complex firm power, such as the round-the-clock power and peak power projects that are currently under construction. This demand for complex projects is clearly evident in the rising percentage of such projects and such auctions. This fiscal year, complex projects represented about 38% of total capacity being auctioned, significantly more than the 8% of the total amount last year. This is set to increase further to 44% of the tenders that we expect to be auctioned over the next several months. We continue to see higher returns in complex auctions, and a greater share of our wins are in this subset. Renew has clear competitive advantages in complex auctions, and as a result, our market share in these auctions is better than any of our peers. Firstly, moderating these projects is not easy. Further, executing complex projects requires expertise in developing wind, integrating multiple sources of power through the use of digital tools, as well as robust project management, something that most players in the sector lack. Our in-house wind EPC capability, our in-house digital labs, and our ability to access the cheapest source of capital do ensure superior returns on our projects. The year is set to be a milestone year for us, as on the execution front, the year will see a significant increase in our operating portfolio, as most of the under-construction pipeline will become operational, providing top-line and bottom-line growth. Now, turning to highlights for the quarter on page 4, we are increasing the bottom end of our adjusted EBITDA guidance range to INR 63 to 66 billion. Amidst the record-breaking year for megawatt installations, we expect that about 1.75 gigawatts to 1.95 gigawatts will be generating revenue by the end of fiscal year 2024. Beyond the currently commissioned 825 megawatts, we have erected 425 megawatts of wind turbines and another 620 megawatts of solar module installations. Our strategy of asset recycling continues to provide us with cost-effective capital for expansion. Last month, we signed a deal for the sale of a 300-megawatt solar asset commissioned 2 years ago, and we anticipate receiving proceeds of approximately US $82 million by year-end. The asset was valued at US $199 million. This transaction will further bolster the substantial sum raised through asset recycling thus far, and at the same time enhance the returns on capital deployed on projects. We expect that we will realize a gain of about US $30 to $34 million as a gain in our Q4 24 EBITDA. Do note that our FY 24 adjusted EBITDA guidance of INR 63 to 66 billion does not include this gain. Our growth trajectory remains robust as we won an additional 3.6 gigawatts of RE projects during the quarter, in a period when tariffs are rising, costs are falling, and competition is near record lows, which underscores our ability to secure growth at attractive returns. We point this out because last year, when all these factors were unfavorable and returns for new projects were much lower, our market share was a mere 3%, well below our normal market share of 10% or thereabouts. Comparing it to this year, in an environment where returns are much higher, we have won about 15% of all auctions. We believe, and that is on top of a bigger base, we believe that this illustrates our commitment to capital discipline rather than just market share. We are pleased also to report that our DSOs, our days outstanding, have fallen below 100 days and stood at 86 days at the end of the quarter, marking a significant improvement of 92 days within the span of a year and an even greater improvement from the peak of 272 days only a couple of years ago. prioritization of timely collection of payables remains paramount for us as it fortifies our competitive stance in the market and has released nearly $200 million of cash for growth. We believe that DSOs will continue to improve over time. Furthermore, there has been a notable enhancement in Win PLF this year. For the quarter, the 17% Win PLF was a meaningful improvement over the 14.7% PLF in the prior comparable quarter, and year to date, the Win PLF was at 29.2%, better than the Win PLF of 27.3% last year. While the uptrend in Win PLF is encouraging, and there is increasing evidence that Win speeds are recovering towards long-term normal levels in the long term, our guidance does not take this into consideration in an effort to remain conservative. I am proud to say that we were profitable for the trailing 12-month period with a profit of US$44 million. We recognize that many investors consider profitability as a key investment decision metric, and these results should increase R&W's attractiveness to a broader universe of investors. While our cash flow from operations has always been positive and growing, we believe that we are now at the scale needed to be profitable consistently on an annual basis and be able to showcase the full value of our platform. We reported cash from operations of US$616 million for the 9-month period ended December 31, 2023, compared to US$595 million for the prior period. Our profit after tax was US$43 million for the 9-month period this year, compared to a loss in the prior comparable period, an improvement of almost actually US$100 million. Turning to page 5, electricity demand growth and the macroeconomic environment continues to favor RE development in India. Firstly, the auction markets continue to propel larger number of auctions and better tariffs. Over 40 gigawatts of auctions have already been completed year to date, and various state and central agencies are working towards another 70 gigawatts, likely to be completed over the next few months. Not only this, the share of complex projects went from 8% last year to about 38% this year, signaling a persistent shift towards complex projects. Further, the tariffs continued to trend upwards as there was less competition. Amongst the tenders that we are tracking, we expect the share of complex projects to go up even further, owing to the need for firm power in the country. Secondly, cost to construct RE continues to improve as solar module prices that make up 40 to 50% of the total cost to construct a solar farm have fallen by around 55% from the prior quarter to hit historical lows of about US$0.11 per watt peak. So let me say that again. They've fallen to hit 11 cents per watt peak. In addition, supply-related challenges that constrained us last year were resolved as our own manufacturing facility came online during the year. We would note that the cost of cells has broadly mirrored the decline seen in module prices, making our manufacturing costs competitive with imports after considering the BCD or import duty. Turning to page 6, our patient and selective approach in auctions has ensured that we are able to deliver superior returns on our projects. With over 40 gigawatts of projects auctioned in the current year, there have been several auctions that were undersubscribed. Lower competition in auctions enables us to lock in superior tariffs, and we saw subscription levels lower than 100% in auctions for complex projects. Our in-house EPC and an integrated supply chain that ensures delivering large projects on time enable us to bid competitively, securing higher returns. Our digital and AI platform, bundled with our experience in developing complex solutions, provides us with a significant advantage over others. While we don't pursue market share, our market share has gone up by almost 5 times compared to the prior fiscal year, from having only a 3% market share last year, when returns were much lower, to about 15% market share this fiscal year, with projects that are projected to have significantly higher returns. We will continue to be disciplined in our approach to growth and pursue the highest return opportunities in the market. Turning to page 7, our core strength lies in our ability to execute projects over time and on time, within budget, and deliver initially expected returns. The on-ground progress remains strong as we have erected about 1.9 gigawatts of assets on the ground. Of this total, 825 megawatts of projects have already received COD approval, and in addition, we have erected 474 megawatts of wind turbines and installed 620 megawatts of solar modules. During this period, we have also installed a 150 megawatt hours battery storage facility for our peak power project. In addition, we also commissioned 276 kilometers of transmission during the quarter. We are beginning to see real constraints emerging in getting access to interconnection hubs, and this new business for us is beginning to provide considerable competitive advantages in bidding for new projects. With that, I would like to turn it over to Kailash to go over the latest financials.
Thank you, Sumant. Turning to page 9, interest from domestic lenders for our project continues to be strong. Recently, we were able to refinance a $325 million bond in the domestic markets with an interest rate that was around 200 basis points lower than the landed interest rate on that bond. Through the refinancing, we were once again able to demonstrate how we have been able to provide long-term finance to our projects with interest rates sub 9%. In India, the yield spreads for Indian RE debt have compressed significantly as the sector has matured. While we stay focused on domestic debt markets, given their low cost versus US dollar green bond market, we have seen yields on our own US dollar bonds improve by about 200 basis points in little over the last 4 months. It is also worth noting that the average spread on our bonds are about the same level as it was at the beginning of the Fed tightening cycle back in 2022. Turning to page 10, our asset recycling program continues to see strong interest from international investors as well as domestic players. Last month, we signed an agreement for the sale of a 300 megawatt solar asset and expect to about $82 million of net proceeds by the year end, which is the fiscal year end. The proceeds from this asset sale are expected to be reinvested in projects that in the current strong bidding market, where project costs to run rate EBITDA are in the range of 6.5 to 7.5 times EBITDA, should have even higher returns than the one just sold. Subject to the rate at which we can raise growth capital from asset recycling, we should be able to grow 1 to 1.5 gigawatt net of asset recycling without having to issue any new shares. Asset recycling effectively provides us with long-term growth capital at the cheapest possible cost of equity, and thereby enabling us to grow while enhancing returns on capital. Turning to page 11, we reported profit after tax for the 9-month period ended 31st December 2023 of $43 million, as compared to a loss of approximately $60 million in the prior year. This was driven primarily by higher revenues and savings in finance costs. During the quarter, we saw significant improvement in wind PLF, as compared to the prior comparable quarter. The wind PLF during the quarter was 17% compared to 14.7% in the same quarter last year, bolstering our confidence about the recovery in the long-term wind PLF towards normalized levels. Though our guidance expects wind speeds will be the same as last year. Our operating capacity increased by 940 megawatt over the last comparable quarter in the prior year, an increase of about 12%. We reported an EBITDA, an adjusted EBITDA of $150 million for quarter 3 FY24, an increase of about 8%. The higher EBITDA is primarily attributable to additional revenue from projects commissioned during the period. This was partially offset by higher operating costs in line with the increase in capacity. Turning to page 12, our day sale outstanding now stands at only 86 days, an improvement of about 92 days from a year earlier. Our focus towards ensuring timely cash collection and pursuing DISCOMs to resolve issues is now paying its dividend. During the year, we have been able to release about $82 million of cash flows in the current fiscal FY24 by timely collection of current dues as well as recovery for the older ones. Turning to page 13, our balance sheet continues to expand and improve. Our cash balance stood at over $1.1 billion excluding the $325 million, which was repaid in January of this year. And our project level net debt was about US$5.4 billion. During January of this year, we refinanced our $325 million bond maturing in April 24, saving 200 basis points and extending the maturity to 15 years. Based on the current level of interest rates, we continue to evaluate opportunities wherein we are able to refinance debt at lower interest rate than the coupon on that debt. This year, in addition to the $8 billion MOU that we signed with PFC and REC, we have signed an additional MOU of with ADB for about $5.3 billion of debt financing, bringing the total amount of access of capital to over $13 billion. These MOUs enable us in creating multiple avenues through which we can access debt at competitive rates and reduce the interest rate burden on our profit and loss account. With that, I would like to turn it over to Vishali to talk about our ESG initiatives.
Thanks, Kailash. Turning to page 15, building on the positive momentum of the past quarter, sharing an update on some of the key ESG ratings and awards we have achieved. We received a score of 79.25 in Refinitiv, which is an increase from our earlier score of 77 in fiscal year 21-22. This is best among all electric utilities and IPP corporates in India for fiscal year 22-23, and second among electric utilities and peers globally. We were also recognized as one of the top performing companies by Sustainalytics, both as regional and industry leaders. We continue to maintain our CDP climate change rating to B, which is the management band, which is higher than the Asia regional average of C, and same as the renewable power generation sector average of B. In S&P CSA, our score has increased from 253 from 41. We received multiple awards, including the prestigious Terra Carta Seal for actively leading the charge to create a climate and nature positive future. We also received the World Economic Forum Lighthouse for the second time for our leadership in fourth industrial revolution technologies and highest category of recognition, which is resilient, by CII Climate Action Program, which is CAP 2.0. Social responsibility continues to remain integral to our business. Since 2014, we have influenced lives of over a million people across 500 villages across India, spanning over 10 states. On the right-hand side of the deck are some of the key programs, which also include employee participation. Under Lighting Lives program, the electrification of 60 schools is under progress in partnership with HSBC. The climate curriculum was rolled out to 9,000 students. Project Surya, which is implemented in partnership with UNEP, nearly 210 women have completed their training as renewable energy technicians who earlier used to work in the very hard salt farming area in Gujarat. The ninth edition of Gift Form Campaign 2023 has benefited around 200,000 people. Back to you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Vishali. Turning to our annual guidance, we are raising the bottom end of our FY24 guidance range by 2% and now expect FY24 adjusted EBITDA of INR 63 to 66 billion. As we said earlier, this excludes gains on sale of assets. On construction, we expect that about 1.75 gigawatts to 1.95 gigawatts will be generating revenue by the end of the year. As some of our projects have received COD extensions, this presents an opportunity to sell power on the exchange at prices often substantially higher than the PPA tariff. With regards to our FY25 guidance, we anticipate sharing our outlook with investors during our fourth quarter FY24 earnings call. We would remind investors that we sold 400 megawatts of assets this year that would have otherwise contributed around 2 billion INR 2 billion in FY25. although the EBITDA contribution from the asset sale proceeds will be even greater in future years as the capital is redeployed. Lastly, we also anticipate being conservative on our weather assumptions in our FY25 guidance. Whilst the weather trends have been better this year versus the prior several years, we are also focused on delivering on our promises to investors. With that, we will be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star, then 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. The first question comes from Nikhil Najana with Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my question and good set of numbers. My first question is on the competitive intensity. Good to see it come down, but I would be keen to understand what is driving it. Is it the sheer quantum of auctions, or is there some other reason why the competitive intensity has come down in the auctions?
Yeah, Nikhil, hi. So look, I think you kind of posed the answer in the question itself. See, last year, as we said, about 12 gigawatts of auctions happened. This year, that number is 40 gigawatts. And so I would say that most of our competitors have pretty full pipelines right now, as do we. And therefore, and because, you know, there are so many auctions happening, you know, you can always win the next one. And so I think for all of those reasons, the competitive intensity on any given project, on any given auction, has come down quite markedly.
Got it, Sumant. Well, the second point then I had is on the module price crash, which would benefit us. So wanted to understand how much of the pipeline is the module price locked, and for how much of the balance part will be able to gain from these low module prices?
So you should assume that everything that we've been buying in the last 3 months and beyond will be benefiting from these lower prices. And therefore, actually, if I were to take a step back, you know, our decision to postpone execution of projects in the last financial year was actually because module prices at that time were 26 to 28 cents, was actually quite on the money, because over the course of the last 12 months, module prices have fallen so much. And so we are able to now commission these solar projects at tariffs, at costs that are, significantly lower, 20 to 30% lower in some cases, compared to what they would have been had we done them earlier. So yes, from this point, from the last, I would say, 3 to 4 months, in fact, even, all the modules that we're buying now are with lower module prices.
So would it be fair to assume most of the capacity coming up in FY25 should benefit from this?
Yes, absolutely.
Got it. But then, Sumant, there's a related point then. So the Renew's own module manufacturing plant, then how is that faring, and how is that being able to compete against this 11 cent per watt peak module prices?
Because, as you know, there is, first of all, a 40% import duty. So that takes that 11 cents up to whatever, close to 15.5 cents. And that is not very dissimilar to what the cost is if you import modules, pay the 25% BCD on a much lower number. The imported price of modules, of cells, is about close to about 5.5 cents. So 25% on that is maybe 1.5, a little bit less than that. So it gets you the cells at about 7 cents here in India. And then the conversion price takes you up to about 15, 16 cents. So you're pretty much at the same level as you would be if you were buying modules from China. Now, also keep in mind the fact that ALMM was supposed to come in from this year, 1st April. So any projects that were not grandfathered will have to buy domestic modules going forward. And therefore,
and are you also looking to
from China or imported modules will not be there?
Got it. So are you also looking to export some modules like some peers are?
Listen, we are, our first priority is to supply modules to ourselves. So we will look at first doing that. And secondly, to the extent that we have any overflow modules, which we probably will have some amount this year, we will certainly look at selling that in whichever market gives us the best return. Now, keep in mind one more thing. that we'll also have our cell plant getting commissioned fairly soon. And that allows us to sell into the domestic DCR market, where also the tariffs are higher because those require cells made in India as well. And so therefore, we could do either of the two. We could sell projects with cells made in India into the DCR market at a higher tariff, or we could sell overseas. Now, we are not giving any sort of guidance on that right now, because obviously we want to prioritize our own requirements first.
Understood, Sumant. And maybe one last question from my side is then on the pipeline side, I saw some delay in the RTC project. Good to see part of it commissioned. But wanted to understand what is the reason, and B, is transmission incrementally becoming a bottleneck, as you seem to be hinting in the presentation, for commissioning of future renewable capacity in India?
So, yes, I think one of the things that has happened this year is that because the amount of renewables is now crossing certain levels, the grid manager, which is really the Central Electricity Authority, has decided to really become a lot more careful about giving connectivity approvals and commissioning approvals to new renewable energy projects. So these processes of commissioning, therefore, are taking longer than they were taking earlier. And that is why you'll perhaps see that the amount of commissioning this year in the RE sector is, at this point of the year, lower than what would have been expected for the industry as a whole, largely because of these new connectivity and commissioning requirements that are sought to be now kept as a higher standard by the grid managers. And I think that's fair. That's, you know, it's a perfectly legitimate thing for them to do. But what that has meant is that the earlier process, where once the project was ready, we could turn it on and get it connected to the grid within a matter of 2-3 days, that process now is taking a lot longer. It's taking as long as 4 to 6 weeks now. And that, in some ways, is delaying the commissioning of new projects for everybody, not just for us. The second thing that is happening is that the connectivity approvals into the grid, and I may be getting a little technical here, are also taking a lot longer than they used to take earlier, because now, especially for these complex projects, which are getting commissioned for the first time or getting connected to the grid for the first time, the grid managers want us to do meet very high standards, which require very extensive modeling of how the whole plant would actually operate under very many different circumstances and situations. And that, by the way, is also a very big learning for us, because we have now gone through this process both for RTC and for peak power, and therefore we are the only company that has gone through this process of what does this connectivity process actually imply and entail. And so, you know, chalk that up to another strength that we now have on these complex projects. We've gone through that, and frankly, it's taken us almost 3 to 4 months to get some of these connectivity approvals, which used to take literally a month earlier. So all of that has actually caused some delays in connections to the grids, and that is why you see that we are now, over the next month or so, going to be connecting a lot of projects into the grid.
Now, Sumant, you may want to talk about the opportunity. Yeah, Sumant, you may also want to talk a little bit about the opportunity to pre-sale some of the power while we're waiting for those CODs.
Yeah, so what's happening, one of the things that is happening is that because now this commissioning timeline has got extended, what we are being allowed to do is to sell, the moment the plant is ready, we can sell the power into the merchant market while we await commissioning, the final commissioning approvals. And because that process can be up to a couple of months long, for those couple of months, we are able to therefore get the merchant tariff rather than the PPA tariff. And that, as you know, in a number of cases, is almost double the PPA tariff. So for the new projects that we are commissioning, we are actually able to realize, given this new process that has now been imposed, for good reasons, but that is also therefore allowing us to generate higher profitability for a certain period of time by selling into the merchant market.
Understood. Very clear. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
The next question comes from Justin Clare with Roth MKM. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking our questions. So first off here, you indicated that you expect to sign the PPAs for the 5.9 gigawatts of capacity that you've won at auction year-to-date in fiscal 24 in fiscal 25. And then the commissioning for those projects is expected in, I think, FY 26 to 29. Was wondering if you could give us a just a little bit better sense as to, you know, when those projects might be completed. Is it you know, can we expect it to be even over those years, or is it likely to be, you know, more the capacity in fiscal 26 and 27? And then how should we think about the timelines for projects after you sign a PPA? And is there more time available if it's a complex project?
Yeah, Justin, hello. So first of all, on your first question of when should these projects be commissioned, it partly depends on when the PPAs are signed, because, as you know, the clock starts ticking from that point on. And typically for complex projects, we have 2 years in which to execute projects. But it also to some extent depends on when the transmission substations will get ready, because obviously we assume that these, that based on the availability that is provided to us by the transmission operator, that certain substations will come up at certain points in time. So we make those assumptions and we can get connectivity into those substations. Now, substations don't always necessarily come up, you know, on the time specified. Some of them do get delayed, and some of them, in fact, are going to be getting ready beyond the two-year time period that we're given to commission the project, in which case the timeline for us does get extended to be aligned with the commissioning timeline of the transmission substation. So it's a little bit variable, therefore, and I hesitate to give you an answer on this. What we will do, however, Justin, is over the next few months, we will, you know, as we think through this a little bit more, and as we get more clarity on the PPA signing dates, we will be able to get a firmer estimate, and we will try to share that with you perhaps in the next earnings call a few months down the road. So,
okay,
yeah.
Just remember,
really, yeah.
Yeah, just remember, Justin, that, you know, those are not in our guidance or projections, right? So as we, as Sumant rightly mentioned, as we sign those PPAs, then we'll provide, we'll have more confidence in the delivery schedules, et cetera. We'll provide more granularity around that.
Right, right. Okay, thanks. And then, so I guess just given the increase in the auctions that we've seen, you know, significantly more volume here, how are you thinking about your capacity, your annual capacity to build? I think in the past you've talked about 2.5 to 3 gigawatts a year. Is that the number that we should be thinking about today, or is it possible that you would look to increase that number given the opportunity?
Yeah, so, you know, the amount of megawatts that we can execute in a year is dependent on a few different factors. Of course, the availability of PPAs is one of those, but it also depends, as you know, on capital availability and funding capability, on execution capability and so on. So I would say that, you know, 2.5 to 3 gigawatts is still a fair number to assume. And of course, in a given year, it may be more than that or a little bit less than that, depending on, you know, transmission, when is transmission coming up, what are the CODs like for different projects and so on. So there will be some variability around that, but that is a fair assumption to make. I think also what will happen, Justin, is that as we see the number of bids, you know, continue to stay at a high level, and the attractiveness of those bids continue to be fairly good, we will try to see how we can ramp up our execution capability over time. But that is something that, as I said, we'll have to, you know, we'll have to really do some work on. I think for the time being, making that assumption that the number that you talked about, I think is a fair assumption to make.
Okay, got it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
The next question comes from Puneet Gulati with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity and congrats on good performance. My first question is on your CapEx guidance. Given the fall in module prices, are you inclined to lower your CapEx guidance, or should we assume this is still a realistic number?
Kailash, would you want to take that?
Sure, Suman. Yeah, Puneet. So, you know, while, you know, we are likely to see some benefits accruing from that, we haven't factored that into the guidance yet, you know, because we would like to actually, you know, realize those benefits before we bake it in.
Okay. And any indication of how much could that benefit be?
So that benefit, you know, depending on, you know, where the prices stay while, you know, we are executing on these projects, could vary in a range. And, you know, we can work it out and, you know, we can share with you based on certain assumptions.
Okay. And has the CapEx for the entire balance remaining capacity tied up, or will that also be tied up over a period of time?
So for the large part of the capacity which is currently in execution, which is the peak power, the RTC project, and the pipeline that we're executing of solar and wind projects on B2B and SECI projects, that is largely tied up, which will be a total of somewhere in the range of around 10.5 to 11 gigawatt. For capacity beyond that, it's yet to be tied up.
Sorry, 10.5 gigawatt. You mean 2 gigawatt additional over the 8.5, right? That's what you meant.
Yeah. So whatever we are currently constructing is tied up. Whatever is to be constructed in FY25, for that, you know, we are in the process of tying it up right now.
Okay. And did I hear it right that in this quarter alone, you might be commissioning more than a gigawatt?
Yeah, because as Sumant mentioned earlier, you know, all the capacity is fully erected and ready for commissioning. It's just, you know, waiting for some approvals. And once we get that, then it will be commissioned. So of the 1.9, 800 is already commissioned and another gigawatt is ready for commissioning. It will be commissioned in the next, you know, few weeks.
And Puneet, just as a reminder about 1.9 gigawatts will actually be generating revenue by year-end, fiscal year 2024.
Yeah, understood. And secondly, you won 5.9 gigawatt of additional projects year-to-date. Of these, how much PPAs have been signed so far?
Right now, Puneet, 400 megawatt PPA is signed. That is the project with GUVNL.
Okay.
And the rest of it is currently under discussion, yeah.
Understood. And this is the total capacity, or is it you know, the contracted capacity?
So this will be the RE portion of the capacity. In some cases where it is RTC2, for example, or hybrid type projects, then the contracted capacity would be lesser to that extent.
Understood. That's helpful. And lastly, if you can, you know, give some color on what's happening on the ALMM front, and the ministry has put it on abeyance. What does it mean for you?
So, Puneet, hi. Yeah. So, look, I think the government is still sort of thinking through exactly what the ALMM strategy needs to be. They had come out with an original circular, which said basically that there were going to be certain exceptions, they have now taken it back, and they're still sort of mulling around what exactly they would like to have, because there are obviously competing interests here. So I think, look, we just have to be patient and wait for them to finally decide what they want to do. So I can't give you any guidance, unfortunately, on it. But as of now, ALMM is supposed to come in from 1st April.
Okay, so in case no further announcement comes from the ministry, ALMM will get effective from 1st April.
That's right, but the reality is that there will be something that will come out soon. I think we just have to wait for it. But look, obviously, we are both a developer and as a manufacturer, we are closely in touch with the government on this whole issue. Now, if they allow some relaxation of ALMM, to that extent, our ITP business will gain. And to the extent that they don't allow that relaxation, to that extent, our manufacturing side will gain. So I think we are pretty hedged on this situation at this point in time.
Okay. And lastly, if I may, the solar PLF this quarter is a little lower versus the last year, the same period. Is there an issue on the irradiation side this time?
No, Puneet, I don't think we can come to any conclusions from just one quarter. I think we have to look at the whole year before we can come to any point of view. So I think one quarter, you have these variations, frankly.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. That's all from my side. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. The next question comes from Maheep Mandloi with Mizuho. Please go ahead.
Hey, good evening, and good morning to others. Thanks for the questions. Just quick housekeeping on the guidance increase for FY24. Can you just confirm that that's mainly due to the merchant sale before final commissioning you talked about, right? Or is there anything else on the guidance increase here?
So on the guidance So on the guidance increase, really, you know, as we're getting closer to the end of the fiscal year, obviously there's more visibility on what you know, we are tracking against, and you know, given the experience that we are having on the resource side and on the expense side both, which is helping us, you know, revise the guidance, you know, as close to, you know, the reality, you know, which will actually pan out. So that is what driven the increase in the guidance. Not really anything to do with merchant sales as of now.
And any idea how to think about the incremental EBITDA generation from selling power in the merchant markets next year?
I'm sorry, can you say that again? The line is a bit not very clear.
Sorry.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, the line is not really good.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mahi.
Sorry. Yes. Any guidance on how to think about merchant or the incremental EBITDA from selling power in the merchant market next year?
So guidance on merchant market next year, is that the question, Mahi?
Yeah, the incremental EBITDA generation. You kind of talked about the opportunity to selling in the merchant markets, right? So just trying to think through how does that impact the operations in Q4 or next year?
Yeah, so look, I think that to the extent that, so first of all, as you know, we keep our exposure to merchant you know, somewhat within the 10 to 15% level of our total portfolio. Now, what's happening is that some of these opportunities where we are able to intermittently sort of, or initially for 2 or 3 months, sell power into the merchant market before we sell it into the PPA, those are opportunities that we're trying to capitalize on wherever they occur. But since we haven't yet given you guidance for what the base case would be for next year, you know, it's very hard to sort of give you a sense of what the extra revenue might be out of merchant for next year. I think we'll just put all that together and then give you guys some sense of all of that, as we said in the June call on when we do the full year results.
And Mahib, just to add a little bit to that as well, one thing that will we obviously are flagging is that as we give guidance, we will want to start the year with conservative expectations, right? So what we're saying is that there could be a significant opportunity, but we will likely take a more conservative view with our initial guidance there.
Gotcha. And then one question on the manufacturing front. Your lines are right now mono-PERC, if I'm not wrong, right, in India. And we keep hearing increased oversupply on the TOPCon side, growing in Asia. So any thoughts on that competitive pressure, even when the ALMM comes into effect in next year, after that, would that require you to upgrade your lines, or any thoughts on the technology here?
Yeah, so look, the situation is that the module lines require relatively little change to move them from monoPERC to TOPCon. Okay, and it's something that can be fairly quickly done without significant capex. So that is something that we will be looking at doing over the course of the coming year. As far as our cell line is concerned, that cell line right now is a monoPERC cell line. And our sense is, of course, that monoPERC will continue for some more time. And so to that extent, we will continue to operate this line, as a monoPERC line. And keep in mind, it's also only 2.5 gigawatts of cells versus 6.5 gigawatts of modules. And as the market moves more to TOPCon, then we will consider adding, if we decide to add more cell lines, which we have to wait and see, then those we could move towards TOPCon. But at this point, we will continue to operate the monoPERC line of 2.5 gigawatts of cells. And the modules, we'll keep 2.5 to accommodate the monoPERC line, and the balance we will move, as I said, at negligible cost to TOPCon.
Yeah, I appreciate the color. I'll take the rest of it. Thank you.
That does conclude our Q&A session, and we'll conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.